Hello and welcome to My Psychotherapy Career, a podcast where we explore the different therapeutic settings our members work in and how they came into their career. I'm Jenna Rashid, the Digital Engagement Officer at UKCP. Our host, Emily Bridges, is the Head of Content and Engagement at UKCP, overseeing all our communications to members and the public, as well as our policy and research work. In this episode, Emily speaks to UKCP psychotherapist Dave Billington. Dave was able to combine a lifelong interest in dreams with psychotherapeutic work after completing his graduate research in dream work and mental health. Now working in private practice, Dave is also the director of the DRI Centre for Dream Studies, which supports research into the uses and applications of psycho-spiritual dream work for holistic well-being. Since taking on this role, he, alongside his colleague Laura, started a podcast series called The Dream Boat, which brings together experts and the public to delve into the world of dreams. Dave is also a lecturer, supervisor, and graduate tutor at the Centre for Counselling and Psychotherapy Education, a UKCP training organisation. In this episode, we speak to Dave about his psychotherapeutic journey and how his continued pursuit of his passions has led him into dream work, research, and supporting students and trainees.
Dave, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
I just want to start by asking you a bit about what drew you to a career in psychotherapy.
I've been thinking about how to answer this. And if you'll indulge me, I thought I might tell a little story, which goes a long way to answering this. And maybe some of the subjects we'll get onto today. Around the turn of the millennium, so 1999, 2000, I was living in Vancouver, and I was in my mid-20s, and I was at a kind of a turning point in my life. And I wanted to travel, and I wanted to see a little bit of the world, and I didn't really know where to go. And I had been to a place in Mexico the year before, run into some nice people who ran a sort of a retreat center and campground in Baja California. And I knew I had a possibility of going back there and maybe working for a season down there in the winter season. And I wasn't sure if it was the right thing. I thought maybe I wanted to go further afield. I'd already been there. And as I was sort of turning this over in my mind, I had a dream one night. And it's a dream I've told before because it was quite important for me. And in this dream, I was in the water on the beach of Los Cerritos in Baja California on a wave. It's a surfing beach, and I'm not a surfer, but I was body surfing on this gorgeous, absolutely perfectly curved wave. And this lovely feeling of being carried along by this wave and seeing the water spraying off my hands in front of me. And this wave just carried me up and it dropped me right on the beach. And kind of from that point, woke up with this feeling of that just feels so right to be there right now. And the reason that I tell that dream is that I did go, and I spent about 6 months living there. And you know, it's a place where a lot of people who are traveling come through. And I met so many people, including the man who eventually introduced me to my wife some years later. And I met a French couple that I then ended up going and staying with in France. And I ended up living in France for 6 years. And I met another friend who years later in France, when I was at a kind of turning point in life again, and wondering what I was going to do next and feeling like I needed a more satisfying career and job prospect than I had. She said, well, you know, you've just been listening to me talk about my romantic problems for about half a day. And I wonder if you could be a counselor or a therapist or something like that. I could really see you in that role. And I hadn't ever really thought about it before. And I hadn't had therapy at that point. And I mentioned to people that I was thinking about this, maybe thinking about doing some training. And everyone I spoke to said, oh, I could really see you doing that. Yeah, I can really see you in that role. So it just felt like so much encouragement for it. And that's what led me eventually to moving to London. There were some other life circumstances that pushed me in this particular direction. But when I arrived in London in 2007, I knew that I wanted to train as a counselor or therapist, even though I didn't really know what the difference was at that stage. And because of my own interests, I knew that I wanted to participate in a training that included the study of dreams. And you know, I was a yoga teacher at that time, and I wanted to be involved in something that had a spiritual side to it as well. And so that's how I ended up at CCPE, the Center for Counseling and Psychotherapy Education in London.
So it sounds like something that kind of came to you rather than you were looking for it.
Yeah, I was looking for something. I didn't know exactly what it was. And there were just a number of threads that came together in the form of a career as an integrative transpersonal psychotherapist, as it turns out. But I didn't know any of those words when I actually started looking.
And what were you doing at the time, kind of work-wise, before this?
So when I lived in France, I was running a residence for foreign students there, not attached to any university. I was managing it and taking care of the building, and I was sort of the single person who was employed there to look after 50 people in 40 rooms or something like that. It served its purpose for a while. It gave me the opportunity to train as a yoga teacher alongside, but there was nowhere to go with it, and I didn't want to spend the rest of my life doing that.
And so how has a career in psychotherapy changed you?
Well, completely is the short answer. Some of the things that have happened and some of the things that I've been able to come across and some of the things I've been faced with in the training, which is designed to make you face things and to stimulate personal growth as well as professional development, they have really changed how I am in the world. And when I look back, I was able to function in the world, but there was a quite a big difference between, you know, persona and the inner reality. And quite often, you know, I was questioning myself and not really feeling like I could do what I needed to, wasn't sure what my capabilities were. And in the course of the training and, you know, going on and doing a master's degree, which was challenging, there's been a step-by-step process of recognizing the capabilities that I do have and certainly recognizing the limitations that I have as well, but just becoming more grounded in reality and being okay with that mix of competences and limitations. And I think that gives me a more realistic way of being in the world. And you know, such confidence as I have feels much more grounded than it ever did before. And I have to say, you know, working with clients and now working with supervisees, I am constantly challenged in a really positive way, challenged to learn, challenged to be empathetic, to open my heart to the experience and the difficulty, the suffering of the people that I work with. And, you know, some people think when they hear about psychotherapy, they think that it must be a real burden to be with that and to hear all those things. But actually, it makes you grow. That's what I've found. So it's immensely satisfying from that perspective.
Thank you. That's really interesting to hear. What does being a UKCP member mean to you?
When I started training, I realized that being in an accredited training program was important, and I knew UKCP was part of that. It was something that gave legitimacy to the training and to the practice. And becoming a member, you know, which is in some ways quite an onerous process, depending how you're going about it. But there's, you know, a lot of hoops you have to jump through. There's a lot of training to do. And what that means as you're going through it is that you have to really want it. And it also is a way of demonstrating that it's important. The work is important and it needs to be taken seriously. And that's something that I've really appreciated along the way with UKCP.
So you now work in private practice. What drew you to work in this setting?
That was always the vision for me, if I'm honest. I worked in, you know, a number of jobs in a number of countries before coming to this point. And it's just my personality that I appreciate independence. That was the vision from the beginning. So as my career has developed, yes, I do work in private practice. And that's been the core of what I do. Again, that's with therapy clients, that's with supervisees. But I've also done work that I never expected to do. So I've started teaching. I've done supervision on the training course that I originally trained in. I lecture on that course now, and also become the director of the DRI Center for Dream Studies, which is, you know, administrative and is relational in its own way as well, and involves teaching and involves developing it as an organization and as a business as well. So things that I never really expected to do. But still, it's in that context of following the drive from within to pursue the things that are meaningful to me, which I really appreciate.
You mentioned earlier about your interest in dreams, and that was something that you knew that you wanted to incorporate into your career going forwards. Can you tell me a little bit about where that interest came from?
Like many people I talk to that are interested in our dream groups and dream courses and who interact with us online and listen to the podcast, dreams were important to me from childhood in that I remembered dreams. They were often very vivid. You know, they felt like meaningful experiences, even if I couldn't explain them, or they seemed a little bit detached from my daily reality. So it was something that was with me through my whole life. And when it came to training, you know, I knew from things that I'd read along the way about Freud and Jung and some of the things that they'd said about dreams. And so, again, that was something that I wanted to make sure was part of the training that I was pursuing. It seemed like it would be an opportunity to explore that and learn so much more about that part of life.
And what does that look like in a kind of therapist client situation? How do you explore dreams with a client?
There are so many different ways, but at the core of it is providing a space where somebody can share their dream experiences. One of the things I love about dreams is that when we tell one another our dreams, we're telling more than we know, because we're telling a story, we're telling a series of images, and it's like a little fable about our inner world, even if we don't know what exactly it's about. And like any story, it has an impact. It creates an emotional resonance for the person who hears it. So in therapy, just having a space to listen and for people to value that part of themselves and realize that there is somebody who wants to hear about it and wants to understand, wants to explore that with them, that's already immensely valuable. And then the way that I've been trained and the way that we most often work with dreams at CCP and in the DRI is using the waking dream process, which is a way of revisiting a dream, sort of like a guided visualization, where you can go back in and interact with the dream, focus on different aspects of it, connect to the feelings that are in it, connect it, you can really embody the sensations of it, really get the most out of it and even explore things in a different way than the dream originally occurred. So maybe there's a different decision that one might make, or maybe you'll stay with something where the impulse is to cut off and get away, kind of, you know, wake up from the experience. And if you just stay with it, often there's something that comes through by just being with the imagery that's there and feeling the feelings that the dream is bringing that connect us to our deepest unconscious and what you might call our higher self, the unknown parts of ourselves that are expressed through the images and through the experiences of dreams.
And you mentioned earlier that you're now director of the DRI Center for Dream Studies. What led to that?
Serendipity and being in the right place at the right time and being willing and being interested. I think those are probably the factors that occurred. In terms of the sequence of things that led to it, you know, I had let it be known while I was training that I was interested in dreams. And then when I went on to do the research masters at CCPE, which is administered by Northampton University, I knew I wanted a master's degree partly because I've had a little bit of an international life and I knew the master's degree would be transferable if I needed to move somewhere else again. And I was interested in the research and I just knew I wanted to do something about dreams, but I didn't really know what at the beginning of it. And exploring that, at the time, Nigel Hamilton and Melinda Powell, who were the founders of the DRI, became aware that I was interested in that, and they were encouraging research into dreams through the DRI. And they offered to support my research, put me in contact with people who had worked with dreams in therapy, and really helped me develop the program of research that I went through. So I was able to do a much broader piece of research than I would have been able to on my own, which was a really great opportunity. And it led to me developing a relationship with DRI and with Melinda and with Nigel. Once I'd finished with my dissertation, they offered me a role working with them in the DRI. It was very, very part-time. That was developing research. I was developing some events and trainings and CPD weekends and that kind of thing that they were starting to put on. And that's what I was helping with. And I did that for a few years. Melinda Powell was the director of the DRI at the time. And then she decided to step back in order to write a couple of very wonderful books, which she has since written. And they asked if I would be willing to step up into the director role, which I was very flattered by and very happy to do. And so that's what I've been doing now for, I think it's about 5 years.
So you've been quite lucky, it sounds, to be able to combine your kind of passion for dreams with your career. What advice would you give to others to help them combine their own passions with a career in psychotherapy?
We don't always get an opportunity to grow within those areas that we're interested in immediately. But I think it's important not to forget that. You know, if something's meaningful to you, if it speaks to you, speaks to your heart, you might say, there's a real value in that. And when you're interested in something, people are interested in speaking to you about it as well. And by talking about it, by not forgetting about it, not suppressing it, that's how you find the other people that are interested in the same things as you. And, you know, in the case of dreams, I think now there's an ever-growing interest in dreams and in the meaning, the personal meaning of dreams, but there's also a lot of psychological and neuroscience research going on. But that was not always the case. And it could have seemed like something that was quite obscure and quite particular. But I was able to find people that were also interested in it and were much farther down a path of exploring it and thinking about it and working in that area than I was at the time. So yeah, if I was going to say to anyone, it doesn't matter what your passion is, talk to people about it, find those like-minded individuals. I had no expectation that any of this was going to happen, but I'm very happy that it did.
That's really good advice. And you've now even started a podcast series for the DRI. What inspired you to begin this and how have you found the podcasting experience?
Yeah. So my colleague, Laura Payne, and I, we have the Dreamboat podcast. I'd been mulling over the idea since starting with the DRI, actually. One of the reasons for that was when I did my research, I interviewed about a dozen people about their experience of working with their dreams in psychotherapy. And in the entire two-year process of the research masters, those interviews were the most precious time for me. I absolutely loved speaking to those people. And I had a very set list of questions that I was asking each person and you know, going through some mental well-being measures with them as well. But in those times when they could just talk about what it was like for them, and they would share their dreams, and they would share what they learned from their dreams, and how they work with them in therapy or in dream groups, it was fascinating to me and just so enjoyable to speak to those people. So I was always looking for a way of doing some more of that, talking to people about their dreams, not necessarily in the therapeutic setting, but as something to be shared and enjoyed and reflected on. A podcast seemed like a way of doing that. You know, a podcast is about people talking and talking to one another. I talked about it again, sharing my passion, sharing my interest with people around. Laura was one of those people. She had got to a point in her career where she was looking to do something different as well. And she said, yeah, I think we should do a podcast. And she is a person with lots of ideas and lots of energy. And it's largely thanks to her that it finally actually happened, I have to say. And this is exactly what we do. We talk to people in the field of dream research, people who work with dreams creatively, artists, writers. We talk to people about their own experience of their dreams. We talk to people who train others in lucid dreaming. We talk to neuroscientists and psychological researchers, and we talk to them about what they know, the information they have, the research they do, but we also always ask them about their own dreams, and we ask them to share a dream while they're on the podcast and talk about what it means to them. And we share some ideas about some of the things that are in a dream, some of the symbols and some of the experiences that come up. And it is just so enjoyable to do that. So again, it has brought together a few different threads of interests and opportunities that were unexpected.
It sounds like you do a lot, though. You kind of got your private practice, you do some research, lecturing, supervising, mm-hmm. the podcast, you've got mm-hmm. your role as director of the DRI. How do you balance it all?
Well, the dirty secret is that I don't. I work too much. And that's the balance I'm always looking for, is how to pursue the things that I'm interested in. You know, and there's so much energy that comes from working in areas and working with people that you find interesting. So that's self-sustaining to a certain degree. But it's always a struggle with me to, you know, turn it off and just have a life sometimes as well.
And I guess it's kind of a risk that you kind of have if you combine such a passion with a career. It's like when you don't know when to switch off almost.
Yeah. But I actually appreciate that. It is a risk, and you do have to learn how to work with it, and you have to have your own boundaries. I'm doing something that interests me. I'm doing something that's fulfilling. And so I can see it through in a way that feels good to me. And I really, really appreciate that about psychotherapy as a career, but also all of these things that are aspects of my psychotherapy career, the podcasting, the management, the research, reading, writing, all of those things. They all work together in some way, but it's up to me to decide how they work together and how that works for me. And I really appreciate that.
Looking back now, is there anything that you wish you knew before you entered psychotherapeutic training that you could share with me?
I don't think so. I don't think so. It was very much a step-by-step process for me. At the time that I started the training, which was it's a 5-year diploma, and then it was followed by 2 years master's. And I didn't really have the capacity at the beginning of that to look ahead 7 years and say, okay, that's where I'll be at the end of this. That was too much. What I did have the capacity for was working through 1 year at a time and one course at a time. When I think about others who might be entering into training as a therapist, I think people need to be aware of the amount of time that it does take, not just to attend the classes and, you know, write the papers, but also to see clients, to have your placements, to do your supervision, and time to read and reflect and let the material that you're absorbing, because it's not just book learning. Even anything you learn from a book, you have to let it really sink into your consciousness and really let it be embodied. And that takes time. So again, I had a certain luxury of time of being married to somebody who was employed. Well, I was employed, so I was able to pay for the training and also to have independence and some time to reflect and to really be with what I was learning. I know it's not possible for everyone. And at least in the case of the CCPE training, for a 4-year diploma, you have 6 years to complete it. And for some people, that's really necessary. And I think it's really good that there is that possibility of extending the training. I mean, particularly because sometimes people start families at the same time as training, but, you know, life circumstances that might come up as well. So being able to give yourself that time, I think, is so important for really getting the most out of therapy training.
You've kind of touched on a lot of this in the answer you've just given, but I just wanted to see if there's anything else that you could share around how to manage those logistics of the training, the costs. You mentioned the time to train, like any advice or anything that you did that really helped with that kind of logistical issue.
For me, it was something that I had to break down into manageable chunks. So, you know, I did a budget before to know I had X amount per month to pay towards training and the cost of living and so on. I knew what my wages were for my job. And for the rest of it, I put my head down and just made my way through step by step. I could work a full-time job and then go to a training that was in the evening as well. And, you know, it's a lot of time spent, but again, it was something that I wanted to do and I was interested in. So there is an energy that sustains that level of activity. I was also younger then, so I don't know what it would be like if I was taking it on now, but it was the right time for me. And there was enough motivation to get me through.
You're now a lecturer, tutor, and supervisor at a training organization. What advice do you give to your students and trainees?
I don't have much in the sense of general advice that applies to everyone. Some of the things that I teach are about, you know, learning reflexive practice. So being able to reflect on how you work, knowing why you do the things that you do, knowing, you know, which interventions that you're using, being able to connect that to some of the theory that you're being exposed to on your training. That having a view on ethics for oneself, you know, knowing that there are always ethical issues that are arising session to session, relationship to relationship. There's power dynamics involved. And it's been really, really good to see the development of the profession around ideas of, you know, equality and identity and understanding the power dynamics that can influence the therapeutic relationship, which I think was possibly a little bit unconscious in the therapy world before. And the work is not done by any means, but it's been really, really good to see that. So I really encourage people to look at that. The other thing is, maybe it's the advice that I'm trying to give myself all the time, which is to have a view to self-care within it and know when it's okay to say, no, I'm not taking on another client at this stage, even though this person is maybe somebody I could help or sounds really interesting or is likable. But actually being able to say, these are the hours in which I see clients and I don't see clients outside of those hours, I think is really, really important.
And thinking about people who are maybe considering training as a psychotherapist or psychotherapeutic counselor, as you were once, mm-hmm. What advice would you give to them?
For people who are considering it, you need to know why you're doing it. Maybe not right at the beginning. And that's the beauty of the foundation courses that almost every training center have. You know, it's a one-year course, one day or one evening a week, in which you can explore some of the ideas and the ways of interacting and you know, being a counselor, being a therapist, and seeing if it's right for you. Because if it's not right for you, it's an awful long training and an awful lot of money to spend to get to the end of it and find out that it's not something you want to do. Not everyone can or should be a therapist, actually. I think it needs to have an aspect of the vocational to it. You need to feel like it speaks to you, it calls to you in some way. That's what sustains not only the training, but being a therapist. You know, being a therapist is, for me, deeply fulfilling, really enjoyable. But an aspect of being a therapist is that you do hear about all the most awful things that people do to each other and that have happened to people. The beauty of it is that you're not just hearing that and being helpless, but that you are offering some tools for healing from those wounds of life and the experiences of life. But if you don't know why you're there, I think it's very hard to continue and to be able to face that day in and day out. If you do know why you're there, that's part of what makes it fulfilling.
Dave, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been really, really interesting hearing from you.
Thank you so much for inviting me on.
Oh, you're welcome. For anyone who's interested in finding out a bit more about your podcast, can you just remind me of the name and where they can find it?
Yeah. So the podcast is called The Dream Boat, and it is available on Apple and Spotify and Google and all the places that you can find podcasts. You do have to make sure that you search for The Dream Boat, because if you don't have the, you end up on a podcast that's actually talking about boats rather than dreams. We are also online, The Dream Boat Podcast, on Instagram and on Facebook as well. And The Dream Boat Podcast is sponsored by and supported by the DRI Center for Dream Studies. The website for the DRI is DRICCPE.org.uk. And you can find out about our courses there. You can find a link to the podcast. You can find loads of research that we have there available for people to have a look at. Also, you can sponsor us, which would just be very, very welcome, because we do need all the help we can get.
Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was UKCP's psychotherapist Dave Billington speaking to Emily Bridges, our head of content and engagement. If you're interested in exploring training, then you can visit our psychotherapy training page, where you can find information on psychotherapy as a career, as well as the different training pathways available to you. Just go to www.psychotherapy.org.uk/psychotherapy-training. All episodes of My Psychotherapy Career are available on our website, psychotherapy.org.uk. You can also subscribe to our channel, UKCP, on your favourite streaming platform. Do you have any feedback you'd like to share with us on this episode or any from our series? Get in touch with us at communications@ukcp.org.uk. Join us again next month. Till then, thank you for listening and take good care of yourselves.